Hey.
I'm pretty hungry.
I'm pretty hungry. Oh! still gotta wait a while.
Do you need to record me saying that?
Peter didn't even pick up on it.
Can you say, you might need to slow it down a little bit. What are you, Shmuel?
I'm pretty hungry.
Oh, snap.
That could be the title.
How's it going? Good. How are you doing?
Yeah,
good.
They ended up unbeknownst at the same Rosh Hashanah party.
Charlie.
Well, I could have seen that coming.
Welcome to the first edition of Bread and Radio, a cooking show with more than just recipes. This time we eat ethnographic, seeking out conversation that is born of eating some dishes passed down to us from our family. I met up with my friends Serena, Shmuel, and Jed to cook some of these dishes. My name is Peter. I hope this meal sounds good enough to eat.
All right, well, my phone's sitting on the sour cream container and it's rolling, so...
Cool.
Let's proceed and see how we do.
Awesome. So, Jed, so you're starting to layer your... What's the dish called again?
Rakat kumpli.
Rakat kumpli.
Yeah.
And tell us about what process you're going through to do that.
Okay, so I have a whole bunch of cut-up russet potatoes and some hard-boiled sliced-up eggs and some... sliced up turkey chorizo and a big bucket of sour cream, and I'm starting to make layers of potatoes and eggs and sausages with some sour cream in the middle, and then I'm going to repeat until I get to the top of the casserole, and then we're going to stick it in the oven. And I forgot to ask if you guys have any butter that I might be able to slip into this.
Oh yeah, we got butter and margarine.
Awesome. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I didn't mention that before.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
I might stick in a couple slivers of butter as we get up there. Apparently, that helps it. Just because until you put the butter in, it's kind of too healthy.
Yeah.
With all this sausage and sour cream, and I feel like we have to mix it up a little bit. But I guess I remember my dad telling me a few years ago that the idea with this is that, like most casseroles, you layer these vegetables with a whole bunch of a variety of fat, mm-hmm. and it bakes down together, and the juices start to mix in it, and it becomes a tasty whole. I think, as I recall, this is one of the first things, certainly one of the first Hungarian dishes my dad taught me how to make when I was a teenager, and my dad realized that I wasn't really taking it upon myself to start cooking, mm-hmm. And as a single parent living in a house with the son expecting to be fed all the time, he felt that it might be nice if I started to pull the ropes about the house a bit, which was a totally fair decision on his part.
So did he have to like cook once a week or something like that? Or?
He'd make a lot of dishes and freeze them and make large quantities and that sort of thing. It was a pain in the butt. I mean, I can only imagine as a single parent who doesn't live with his wife and taking care of his son and keeping him well fed in that, mm-hmm. and also maintaining his own life and his job and all that sort of thing. I'm exhausted trying to take care of myself.
Yeah.
And taking care of a finicky young person would add another layer to all that. So anyway, I remember him parking me down and saying, look, it's time for you to learn the joys of cooking. And I think the first thing he taught me how to make was mac and cheese. Mm-hmm. And he said something like, pay attention, because in college this is going to save your life. Mm-hmm. But he also taught me fairly early on how to make rakat kumpli, because it's one of those wonderful dishes that you basically collect a bunch of raw or mostly raw ingredients for, layer together, and cook down until done.
So you made this before?
Yeah, a long time ago. Never made it with turkey chorizo before, but I hope it's going to be good.
Sweet.
Anyway, the maneuver has definitely lasted. Still, my favorite things to make are stuff that you can throw into a pot and cook for an inspecific amount of time and pull out and have the sum total be greater than its parts.
Yeah. No, I had actually
building up.
Arranged to get the recipe from my grandmother.
Oh, cool.
So I'll play my grandmother Ava's recipe for chicken paprikash right now and follow her instructions as I cook.
So it's chicken paprikash.
It's chicken paprikash.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so I was thinking about 4 to 6 servings because that's what I usually did.
Right.
So you buy the chicken pieces and you can get it skinless. Skinless drumstick, skinless breast pieces.
Okay.
And skinless leg. And the leg you can cut in half because it would be too big for chicken paprikash. When you just roasted, then the leg you can use in one piece.
Okay.
So you use oil and onion, at least 2 medium-sized onion for this amount. And you have to just saute the onion until it begins to brown.
Okay.
And I use yellow and red paprika.
Okay. Is that the spicier paprika or is that the sweeter paprika?
No, that has nothing to do with the sweet paprika.
Okay.
This is the one that you get just to eat with sandwiches.
Okay.
And you slice it up longwise, narrow, not too narrow. And you put it with the onion. And when this wilted, then you put in the sweet paprika. That's the Hungarian sweet paprika. Usually I have, and I buy it in places like Hungary, when you can, and find a Hungarian place where you can get paprika. Because what you get at the supermarket, it's not the same taste.
Mm.
It's not as good. And then I put that in, the chicken pieces, and then I just started to use chicken... So I don't put water. You can get like with the soups in the supermarket.
Oh, like the stock.
The stock. And that's really, really nice, tasty. And then it just cooks, sauteed, cooks. And at the end, I use cornstarch.
Mm.
Not flour. The flour gets a little bumpy.
Okay.
And sour cream.
Okay.
And I put the cornstarch in the sour cream, make it nice and smooth. Then I put some of the stock, the sauce actually, because that moment is already a sauce with the paprika and onion and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I put the sauce on that cornstarch and the flour mixture. And then I mix it in so it gives a thicker gravy.
And sorry, just to take a step backwards, how long do you think it cooks once everything is inside?
It would simmer 30 minutes
and
until the chicken is cooked through and tender.
And do you need to add water as well? Or no
then
water.
I use the stock, then I don't use the water.
Of course.
And, yeah, and that's about it. Now you can use with it any kind of pasta, fettuccine or anything. You don't have to make the gnocchedli because that's a little harder. But, again, it's eggs. I don't know how many eggs, it depends on, 2 or 3 eggs, and then you mix in flour, a little salt, and soda water, and in this mixture, it's a thick mixture.
Mm-hmm.
In boiling water, you just go with a cutting board and a knife and little pieces, and you put them in the boiling water, and that's the gnocchedli. But
okay.
The easier way is just to use any of the pasta.
Okay. I think we might just use pasta instead of making our own gnocchedli.
Sure, it's perfect.
Okay. is. Yeah, her last name is Horvat also.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great names and the like.
Yeah.
But didn't your family, like, your family's name wasn't Horvat before, right, Jed? They switched it.
Mm-hmm. Horvat was a nom de plume, or I guess a nom de guerre. Because they came up with it during the war, and it was a decoy to make them sound less conspicuously Jewish.
Yeah.
Is it the same with your?
I don't know if that's the case with her. A few of the different names on my mother's side were like that. They switched them to make them sound. But there's also, they switched not during the war, but like, you know, generations before to sound less Jewish.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Started out early.
Yeah, I think maybe like a generation or two before.
Wow.
Do you know what it was?
Jed, your family just switched it when you were in Canada, right?
They switched it in Hungary.
Oh, okay.
Just before they came to Canada. I forget when they did exactly. It would have been before the war ended. I'm going to guess around 39 or 40. Do you know what your family's names were previously?
I don't. And so I know that on my grandpa's side, his father was Christian anyways. His mother was Jewish, and then he was baptized Christian. And then my grandmother, her name was Elkan, which I think was also just a kind of generic Christian Hungarian name.
Uh-huh.
But that name was a name that was changed, in, I think, a generation or two before. I don't know what the other names would have been.
Hmm.
Yeah.
My grandpa's family, the one from Polish border, their name was Bonakowski. And when they immigrated to Canada, like after the kids grew up a bit, some of the brothers, I can't remember, I think this one, some of the brothers chose to stay with Bonakowski, and so some of my great uncles still have that name, and my grandpa chose to switch it to Bonnie to make it sound more Canadian, and so my mom's name is Bonnie now. And it's funny that even within the family, like, not all of them switch and stuff.
Mm. Mm.
But yeah, my grandpa, it just kind of showed, like, if my grandpa, like, didn't ever speak German to my mom, or just kind of, like, tried to not have that be part of the family at all, which, like, my mom's really sad about now.
Yeah.
She doesn't really know a lot about him growing up at all.
Mm. And the language didn't transfer it.
Mm-hmm.
So are there other, like, when you were growing up, other stuff that your grandparents would cook that your family still cooks, or even if it's not, like...
Yeah, I mean, none of it's really... My grandma was just, like, I have that. And so I just remember, like, her baking me first, because we'd go, she used to live up in the Coopies, and so we'd only go for a month every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And so my birthday always fell when we were there, and she kept trying to make me, like, sugar-free cakes or a tofu cake. And, like, they were never any good. And I was always, like, so disappointed as this little kid. And I'm like, oh, a cake! And they'd always look amazing.
Yeah.
And then I'd go to eat them, and they'd be like, no sugar or tofu.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? So she finally gave up on that. Yeah, she just eats really well, and so she's invented all of her own recipes. I don't know where some of this, like, the chili cheese cornbread, I don't know if you've had it.
Yeah,
before.
I have.
Like, the cornbread casserole, like, that's something that my family, like, we're just known for bringing that to potlucks back home.
What's your wine, shit?
Oh, we have plenty of wine. Actually, you can grab your glass, actually. You have some open. But we're recording on his cell while we finish cooking, and then once we start eating, we'll try recording on my laptop and hope this won't be too intrusive.
Oh, yeah, we can just sit the laptop there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, Shmuel...
It's supposed to be recorded eating.
I don't have the...
Yeah.
Sorry?
I always love to be recorded while eating.
Yeah.
I prefer to eat loudly.
Yeah.
It's the most flattering.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I lived with my dad when I was a teenager, but I kind of... He wasn't really a great cook, but I kind of went the opposite way, where I just sort of never bothered to learn how to do well.
The bar was low, so you didn't try to raise it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Like when I was growing up. I really know you. It's funny, like, yeah, we kept kosher when I was growing up, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not, like, super kosher?
Super
like,
kosher.
Wow.
Like two separate sets of dishes.
Wow.
No eating milk or dairy after eating chicken or meat.
Do they still do that?
We had a lot of... my dad does, I suppose.
Well, yeah. When your parents separated, did your mom keep that up, or did she?
No, she abandoned it as soon as she wasn't married to a rabbi. as soon as she wasn't the rebbitzin, which is a rabbi's wife. Yeah.
Oh, your dad's a rabbi.
Oh yeah, I never mentioned that.
Oh.
Yeah, my dad's a rabbi.
You're in Vancouver.
Or is he no still anymore. Now he lives in Jerusalem, but he was for about 5 years.
Oh no way.
Yeah. Early 90s.
I probably just interrupted what you were just talking about.
No, I don't know what I was talking about.
What was that like growing up as a rabbi's son?
It was interesting, especially because I was the oldest of four, and my little brother was recently talking about this, and he was kind of describing me as having taken one for the team. Like, I kind of had to. I had all the religious pressure on me, and I was kind of a bit of a Jewish scholar actually.
Ooh.
As a 11-year-old, I was very precociously into reading the Bible and the Talmud and the Mishnah, all that crap, when I was a kid.
I can picture you reading almost anything but that.
Right, well, that's how bad the reaction is now. So in a way, and especially, because you're kind of a center point for the community,
mm-hmm.
for the congregation, and you're someone who's kind of well-known because you're the... You're the rabbi's son, and everything you do kind of, I think, gets interpreted kind of in that prism of, so, you know, there's some pressure to behave well, I think, for one thing,
mm-hmm.
to, you know.
What do you think, is there space for all this food there, or should we just serve it here?
We could pull the table out of it.
Hmm. Touché.
Yeah.
Peter, what kind of podcast do you have?
Well, this is a first-time experiment.
Okay.
It's for an anthropology class.
Okay.
Where we've been learning about, like, the senses.
Okay.
And what kind of stuff is triggered by the senses. Where we learn about performance and how we perform our everyday lives.
Okay.
And then how identity plays into that as well sometimes. And then even, like, experimental mediums and stuff for doing ethnography. So this is, like,
no,
a clusterfuck of
all of them.
That.
Yeah.
Shmuel and our friend Chris and I used to run our blog, and the original concept was to do a weekly podcast. But we were very quickly intimidated by the thought of, for lack of having a stringent format, we realized that we basically have to hold the best possible conversation, or the best moments of our conversation,
yeah.
in half an hour period, you know,
yeah.
hopefully without much editing.
Yeah.
Shmuel and Chris were into it. I didn't think I could hold it up. I think I'd choke in the first 5 minutes and slither into a corner and stop talking.
Totally.
So how's you?
How's
you?
You?
Good.
So when was the last time you ate that? The kumpli?
Maybe a couple years ago.
How does it compare to the other kinds of sausage you put in there and other ways you've had it before?
I haven't tried the sausage yet. Yeah. That seems about right. When I had it as a kid, my dad would throw in a ton of Hungarian salami,
mm-hmm.
just thinly sliced, and it gets sort of crispy like bacon. It's delicious, but it's probably very sad meat, as opposed to happy, well-treated.
The constraints I put on my
And have you had Hungarian food before, Sarah?
I haven't had this kind, but I have... Took, which is what we were hoping to make. Jed's dad made a big batch of it for us, and we took it on the boat. And I loved it. It looks kind of crazy, and it looks like you're not going to enjoy it necessarily. And then it just, like, it's so refreshing. I brought some leftovers to work, and I was, like, trying to convince my coworkers to eat it. And when they finally did, they were like, oh yeah, that's actually really good.
It's creamy and it has a lot of dill in it, and it has long stringy bits of squash.
Mm.
So from a salad point of view, it's kind of questionable if you've never seen it before, but it's really tasty, and I think especially with spicy paprika-laden food, it's a good mashup.
Yeah.
So I'll do that next time for podcast number two.
Yeah. I just realized that there's no real vegetables in this.
But I see a bay leaf here.
Yeah. Just put that as a family right now.
Sauerkraut. Potato.
Mm.
It's a vegetable.
Excuse me up, I'm talking sauerkraut.
Look, is this pork?
Chicken.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. Have you had chicken paprikash or paprikash something before?
I think I have, yeah. Yes. Hey, when I was there. Mm. It was different restaurants, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
Following our dinner of rakat kumpli and chicken paprikash, we switched modes to crepes, Hungarian crepes, palacinta.
Okay, so Serena, can you tell me what you're mixing here?
I am just mixing 1 cup of all-purpose gluten-free flour, which is a mixture of various non-wheat flours, such as garbanzo bean flour, potato starch, tapioca flour, white sorghum flour, and fava bean flour. But I'm not bothering to put in the xanthan gum, but it does have directions for how much xanthan gum you should use depending on what type of baking you are doing. That's very handy.
So that's all-purpose. It easily replaces wheat.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's still not exactly the same. It makes things a bit heavier, but because it's a mixture, it mirrors it better than, for example, just using all rice flour.
Gotcha.
No.
Because it doesn't have the same properties. And then I am adding 2 eggs, and then 1 cup of milk, and 1/2 cup of water. And then a little bit of butter, and then I mix it. Oh, this is a funny recipe. It tells me to wait, but we're not going to wait. And then you just pour it onto a pan that's been preheated.
Sweet. Because I understand that crepes are... everything is much thinner than than regular pancakes.
Yeah, it's a lot thinner than pancakes.
But the I wouldn't say dough, but the what do you call it? The batter. It's like much more milk and stuff.
I think it just ends up with a thinner batter.
Okay, so Jed, so what's going to be going inside the middle of the crepes?
Inside the middle, I'm mixing some cottage cheese with sour cream and blending in some honey. And I'm going to throw in some raisins. And if I can oblige you for a little bit of cinnamon.
Oh, yeah.
If you should have such a thing.
Oh, yeah.
I might stir that in, too.
Some cinnamon right here.
Sweet. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be option one. And option two is going to be Nutella.
Actually, I remember like at the Hungarian restaurants, and what my grandparents used to do for stuffing is also jam.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love jam.
And also, actually, the Hungarian restaurants, they'd have this chestnut puree. Have you ever had that?
Chestnut puree. That's the other Hungarian word. I don't know. It's so amazing. And it comes out almost as a stringy batter. They push it through a press.
Mm. So there's something that tastes very similar to that if you mix tahini with Nutella.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar.
My dad's partner is German.
Yeah.
And for my birthday, she made me a hazelnut cake, which was just, the flour was made from hazelnuts.
Wow.
She ground up, an insane number.
was fucking amazing.
It was so delicious. And then my dad carried it up a mountain for me, because we were hiking on my birthday.
Do you want milk with our pots?
I'm good. That would go well, though.
I like a cinnamon.
That's my best approximation of what it's supposed to taste like.
My Transylvanian Jewish grandmother would make crepes, much like these ones, but she would call them blintzes, was the, I guess, the Yiddish word for them.
Okay.
And yeah, and they were kind of, fruits and sour cream and raisins.
Like the whole fruits? Or like...
Kind of pieces of fruit. I think like a little, these are raisins, right?
Raisins.
I think raisins like this, maybe honey. A lot of things I really like. I was really into sugar when I was a kid, and I couldn't have it that frequently, so
yeah.
Having blintzes was always a really exciting treat.
Sweet.
That's kind of the one thing I remember. She would send them to us like frozen blintzes to keep in our freezer for long periods of time.
It's funny, I've heard people talk about blintzes a lot, but I never realized that blintzes were crepes.
Yeah.
Until now, when you're telling me. Yeah, I thought it was a dessert, but.
Yeah, I guess I never, it's funny, like, that's obviously what they are, but I never really associated them with them, because these crepes just look very similar, so.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking about them earlier.
I'm like, I'll be right over. You have been listening to Bread and Radio. This edition was led by Jed Horvat, Serena Talbot, Shmuel Marmerstein, and Ava Horvat. My name is Peter Driftmeyer. I would like to thank Derek Hain of the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Simon Fraser University for her mentorship, and Sarah Buchanan and Maria Peschdotter at CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC. Until next time, keep it real with your meals.